Welcome to the February 2nd, 2023 edition of the USCHoop.com College Basketball Podcast. This is a bit of a special edition for us. It's going to be a mini episode, a little bit different than the usual. I'm actually on the road. This is Dave with Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm awesome, Chase. Yeah, just a little bit different stylistically here, but have a few things to touch on. So we're going to do a little brief segment on National Signing Day for USC football, just because that happened yesterday. And then we'll touch on a few basketball things. So we'll do a little bit of a preview on the Washington schools, and then I'll just give a few thoughts on the tournament picture and kind of how we're looking in the brackets compared to other teams. So Chase, I'll just throw it to you really quickly. Any initial thoughts on signing day? I know there was a lot of disappointment among some USC fans, and well, other USC fans were pretty happy with the class overall.
Yeah, so I think the overall, and I did a post on, I think, the Peristyle about this. I think there's a general nostalgia and loss of empire for the great days of National Signing Day, and especially when we go back to the, period from, even really the Kiffin and Sark periods when National Signing Day was a huge deal, even post-Pete Carroll where we're getting – you see the massive recruits waiting for the letters to come in. And, the reality of today's game is that the majority of players are already locked up by the time you get to a National Signing Day. They're locked up from the early period. So there's only a few guys left over. And then I think there's a real heightened sense of importance placed on these players, which I don't necessarily think is really, it reflects the reality of the what's left on the table. I mean, really the best players have already signed for the most part. There's exceptions. I liked what I saw of Roderick Pleasant from Sierra Canyon, the cornerback. He obviously has a world-class speed. He's going to be a track star. You'd always like to get those guys. I would have loved to have gotten him. And I think the fact that we lost him to Oregon, yet again, a high school recruiter losing to Oregon, caused a lot of angst, and I think there's a lot of legitimacy to that concern. I do think, though, there's some context that should be added here. That first off, the entire kind of 24/7 sports and recruiting service regime of ranking of West Coast players, particularly California players, on defense is really tough. There's only six players in the top 300 from the defensive side of the ball. And, Pleasant was, I think, number two or something in California. That's pretty amazing considering the amount of talent that historically we see from California. I think there has been a loss. There has been a loss of talent in California. There's no doubt that's a result of demographic shifts and kind of the de-emphasis of football and parents not wanting their kids to play football. But this is to the extreme. And I think a part of this is the legacy of COVID and not having those Nike combines and those kind of events that we used to have. And it really reflects directly on a guy like Pleasant, because I can't, if you watch him on tape to the extent you can, he looks like he has very strong cornerback technique. Obviously, we know he's fast. What we don't really know is how he's on change of direction. And the classic way to measure that, if you don't have a lot of great tape, and there's not a lot of great tape on him, is through the combine events, like a Nike combine event where he runs a 20-yard shuttle. And we don't have that. We don't have that information on him. So I can't tell if he is a really fast guy that has good technique, or if he's an amazing athlete that actually might have sub 4.2 shuttle time to go on top of his blazing speed, in which case he's going to potentially be a big star and SC's really missed out on a really truly unique player. Or is he just a good prospect that SC missed out on another guy to Oregon, and we're just going to see how it plays out? So I guess my response was really focused on Pleasant, but I think that's the guy that's kind of triggered a lot of concern, rightfully so, because Oregon is winning practically every head-to-head matchup with SC on high school recruits as we, you know, went down the stretch here. So what are your thoughts here, Nick?
Yeah, so totally echo your sentiment on Pleasant. He's kind of one of the rare prospects that has the track times to back up the really good high school tape, which I think is what makes it frustrating. Is like there actually is, you know, a track record of him producing on the field as opposed to a guy like Mateo Ugalele, right? Where you have the elite measurables and you have the bloodlines with his brother and all that, even though his brother's kind of washed out in college a little bit. But with him, you don't have like this elite high school production. So I think fans, and rightfully so, are more frustrated with the Pleasant loss. Kind of broader picture too, right? Like USC fans aren't used to losing 17 of the top 20 composite high school recruits from California. And that happened this year coming off of an 11-1 season. So like you said, there are demographic changes, which has weakened the California talent, but there's still enough there where I think you should be getting more of those kids. And a lot of that is NIL, quite frankly, right? The other interesting thing that I noted to you, I think, the other day, just offline, is that Oregon really hasn't been winning these recruiting battles against other schools. And then they're winning every recruiting battle against USC for elite recruits, right? So you look at Mateo Ugalele, you look at Dalen Austin, right? Who they flipped from LSU, but that was more of a USC-Oregon battle down the stretch. I think he was related to Willie McGinnis too, went to Long Beach Poly. You throw Roderick Pleasant in there. You have Josh Connerly from last year, right? Who was a solid commit to USC, who then Oregon outbid USC for. Right. But then you take these other national recruitments, right? Like Peyton Bowen, right? The guy flips from ND to Oregon, but then he signed for Oklahoma. And then you have Nicholas Harbor, right? Who Nike finalized a deal with him the night before signing day. South Carolina got a hold of that and upped their offer in the morning and were able to keep them. So you have this pattern forming of Oregon having a strong NIL presence. But it's not like, you know, an NIL presence that you can't overcome. But USC is just not competitive in these high school recruitments. So I would just, you know, some of this is, you know, strategy, but I don't think it's sustainable long term. I do completely agree with your sentiment that the transfers are underrated in the 24/7 rankings relative to the high school players, just given the lack of risk in that market compared to these high school players, which do bust all the time. But the high school recruiting, I think, does have to get better if you want to compete on a national level.
I agree with that. I do have a theory on the Oregon. Why is Oregon only beating USC for these head-to-heads? And I have a theory on that, which is I think the level of player is just below what we might call elite, in the sense that these other guys, for example, Moore going to UCLA, Harbor going to South Carolina, those schools, those competitors are willing to like break the bank on NIL to beat Oregon for those players.
Yeah.
USC has not been willing to break the bank for, let's say, the next level of player down, which may be a Pleasant, maybe it's a Mateo. I don't think that those guys are. I think Pleasant is a step down from Harbor. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe Pleasant will end up proving me wrong. I definitely think like a guy like Mateo is a big step down from Moore. You know, I would actually place, like, I would spend 10x for Moore compared to what I would play for Mateo. But
yeah.
SC has not really shown the willingness to kind of, I would say, getting to a bidding war for that level of player, the way I think UCLA probably was willing to get in a bidding war for Moore because he's a quarterback, he's worth it. And South Carolina's perception of, hey, we're going to get a bidding war for Harbor, he's worth it for us. That's my guess. I can't prove it, but it makes sense, right? It, like, it's kind of like a hypothetical or a hypothesis, excuse me, that kind of actually makes sense.
Yeah. And then you kind of look at it from the angle of these other schools, right? South Carolina and UCLA. Like Harbor was the marquee recruit in that South Carolina class, right? And Moore was the marquee recruit in that UCLA class. So when you have a guy at that level and you have no one else in that class that's close to that level, you do have boosters willing to just say, okay, we're going all out for this guy. He's going to make our class. You saw a similar thing with Caden Proctor, who was that offensive tackle from Iowa, who was committed to Iowa and then flipped to Alabama on signing day. He came out and did an interview and said, Iowa offered me more NIL than Alabama, because those boosters like knew this was a five-star kid from Iowa. They were willing to break the bank for him, but he decided to go to Alabama anyway. So I don't think SC's quite at the level of Bama where they're going to get like kids at a significant discount. And I suspect that's what happened with Mateo and Pleasant, right? Where they had offers out, but you know, those kids were willing to, you know, take the better offer at Oregon and weren't willing to give USC that discount that maybe USC ends up getting in future years if they become a perennial playoff contender.
Right. And I think that's right. And I want to just make clear where my position is on all this, because I've been kind of like the guy that's not sounding the alarm bell to some extent. I don't think what we're currently doing is sustainable. I want to make that clear. However, I don't think what Oregon's doing is sustainable either. I don't think, you know, try to win and everything. And we've seen, like, what was it? I think it was like somebody on Bro had kind of gone through the, like, Oregon's 2021 class. I think it was only like six players left in it. And that was like a very heralded class. You know, particularly when we're dealing with California post-COVID, there was a lot of uncertainty on the quality of these players, in my opinion. I don't think we've had a really great view of them overall. This past season was a good season. We had a full high school football season to get a look at them. So that's helpful. But there's players out there in California. I guarantee there are players out there that we are missing on. It obviously is ridiculous to think that only six players out of the top 300 are, you know, worth your California defensive players. That makes no sense. There are players that were being missed that are under the radar. I don't know if SC is getting them or not, but SC's got to like really kind of like look through and do a really comprehensive look. And by the way, Pete Carroll, when he got to SC, those best recruiting classes, you know, those very early ones, 2001, 2002, you know, he was bringing in really interesting players. Some of them were three stars. That's where he got Mike Patterson. I mean, that was a huge, huge get. He's a three-star player from, I think, Los Alamitos, if I'm wrong. I might be wrong about that, but I think so. And, you know, and there were several others like that where he really mined the depth of California, understood where the best players were. I'm not sure we're quite at that level yet with our current staff, and we're going to have to do that. We're definitely going to have to hit high school hard. But I don't think it's just a matter of going around, going to the lists that these recruiting services put out and saying, oh, these are the top guys in California. These are the guys we need. Because, you know, on that entire list, there were, you know, two guys from Southern California that were front seven defensive players, and one was Mateo. So, like, it's just, you can't, that on its own is not going to get it done. You're going to have a more comprehensive approach. So I agree what's going on now is unsustainable, but you can't just do what Oregon's doing either. So I guess those are my thoughts there.
Yeah. One kind of final thought too is with the whole transfer portal era. You've got one more year of the Pac-12, right? So like, let's say Roderick Pleasant gets a little bit homesick, right? You know, USC's going to the Big Ten in, you know, just in about a year. And maybe he wants to transfer home, and with that revenue gap that you're going to see between the Big Ten TV deal and whatever the Pac-12 gets from Amazon or, you know, whoever gets those rights, it's going to be gigantic, right? So maybe then you can increase your NIL offer to him at that point to get him into the transfer portal if he is worth a scholarship, right? Like you saw guys like Justin Flo go up there and put up no tape, and then USC didn't want him. So maybe Pleasant washes out up there, but if he hits or if Mateo hits, you know, and it's clear that Oregon's well below USC as a program, and you have the financial means to go get them out of the portal, that could always be an option too. We'll see how it plays out. It'll be interesting to follow. Any final thoughts, Chase, or
we can turn to basketball too? Yeah, I guess we should mention, I was surprised we got Walker Lyons, the tight end. He's going to take a mission.
Yeah, me too. He's
saying it's only going to be a one-year mission. Apparently, it's to like Norway, right? So if that's true, one-year mission in Norway, that actually isn't that painful. It's not like he's going to like, somewhere in like sub-Saharan Africa. It's not going to have resources that he can't work out or anything like that. So if that's the truth, that's a tremendous. And I mean, USC will get him pretty soon. And the other thing to talk about is Deuce, the tight end from Out My Way, did not sign, and it doesn't look like he's going to be signing anytime soon. He's in a strange situation. There's been some talk of this on different message boards, but he is a potential major league draft prospect. I think he's currently rated like 123rd by Baseball Prospectus, but he doesn't play high school baseball. He's playing on these traveling teams, which I guess is like a new trend, and maybe I'm hopeful that it's not like the permanent trend. I don't want to high school baseball to go away, but he is not playing. He actually played high school basketball for, he's at Pinnacle. I can't remember what high school he's at, but he actually played high school basketball. Not very good. I think he averaged like three and a half points a game before he gave it up for the season. So we'll see. I have a feeling it's looking like he's going to try to see what his draft status looks like. He might wait to see if he does get drafted and how high. I don't want to go do a whole conversation about like the financial side of baseball compared to football, but it's very, very, very different. And I guess if he does get drafted, we can talk about that on podcast later.
Yeah, at least my read on it, unless his draft stock is being misrepresented by the online ranking services for the MLB draft, football would be the more lucrative path. Is kind of what I think here. So moving on to basketball, we've got two games this week. First one is tonight against Washington State. Washington State's lost 3 of 4, but they did smoke Arizona State at home in their most recent game. The other games were competitive. Colorado, they lost 2 by 3 in Boulder. Arizona, they lost 2 by 5 up in Pullman. And then Utah kind of blew them out. But they've been generally trending in the right direction. They're up to 58 in KenPom, which is their highest point in KenPom this season. They did beat USC by 10 up in Pullman on New Year's, that I'm sure fans remember that game. It's a game that we can't really sleepwalk through. I'll just throw it to you for your initial thoughts on Wazoo.
I think it's going to be a tough game. I will pick us. I do think we'll win, but I'm sure I'm going to be very frustrated at different moments of this game. I'm already anticipating that. The last game of the night, too, I think it starts 8 o'clock up Pacific time, 11 o'clock on the East Coast. Washington State, I think SC has a pretty good record recently against Washington State up until that loss up in Pullman. I think the key here is, do we actually guard the three-point line in this game? We didn't do it. We just didn't do it when we played in the first time around, and they killed us.
Yeah.
They absolutely killed us. If we guard the three-point line and they make the shots, they make the shots. But if we guard it, I think we'll win. We just got to bring an intensity we didn't bring before. I certainly hope our players are not more, lackadaisical now or starting to get, read their own newspaper clippings, to use the cliche. After beating UCLA, look, our defense is very, very, very good if we play up to our level that we're capable of. But if we let off a little bit, man, like our three-point defense gets bad and teams just start killing us on the three-point line. So I think it's, I think we'll come out pretty strong. I think we'll have lapses. I think we'll probably play well enough to win the game, though. So Washington State's a good team. Muhammad Gay had a huge game against the first time around. I think he'll probably have a pretty decent game, even though we're going to be throwing both Josh and Vince at him. But I think we'll do enough to win this game.
Yeah, Gay has had some monster games on the offensive glass, too, which is the weakest point of our team is defensive rebounding. So there's some, concern there. He had 8 rebounds against UCLA up in Pullman last time they played him. And the last two games, he's had 6 offensive boards against Arizona and then 7 against ASU. So he's really come live on the glass. We actually did a pretty good job rebounding in that game. So we held Gay to 4 total rebounds, and we just lost because we got absolutely destroyed on the first shots with the 3-point defense, like you mentioned. So one interesting stat too that I was looking at, just because they're a team that takes so many threes, Kyle Smith's an analytics driven coach. You know, his approach against teams with superior talent is just to take a bunch of threes and hope to make enough and get some offensive rebounds and see what happens. So Jabe Mullins is the best shooter on that team. He killed us in the first game, went 4-6 from deep. Fun little stat with Jabe Mullins. So he hasn't played in 4 games. They've gone 1-3 in those games. So of the remaining games, in games that he's shot over 50% from 3 in, they're 7-1. And in games where he hasn't shot 50% or higher from 3, they're 2-9. So they kind of go as Jabe Mullins goes. So we have to really run him off the 3-point line. We didn't do a good enough job in that first game at it. So that's the two things I'm kind of looking for in this game are, you know, do we defend Mullins? And you know, you can throw like Powell and Rodman in there as well, but I think Mullins is their best shooter. And then can we keep Gay off the glass? We did one of those things in the first game and lost. I think if we do both of those, I think we can win it by like 10 to 20 points. But if we don't rebound or if Mullins gets hot, it could be a dogfight. So that's my thought on that one. We'll see. It's another quad two opportunity, and we've done pretty well in those games. Only lost coming to Wisconsin. We've won all the others. So I do like our chances. We're favored by 6.5 to 7 in Vegas right now. Okay. So the other game we have this week is Washington. And Chase, I know you're particularly concerned about this one. I'll just give you the floor here to hear your thoughts.
Well, yeah, I guess I just, my thoughts here are that Washington has some individually talented players. They have Minifield at point guard, who's really quick and can cause some problems for us. Braxton Maia, when we played them, he actually, you know, caused some problems when he wasn't in foul trouble. He ended up fouling out against us, didn't play a ton of minutes. Now we have Vince, maybe he can be more kind of like mitigate against his success there. And then, you know, they have like Keon Brooks, who's a talented guy, started for Kentucky. The issue with Washington is it always seems like the sum is not as strong as of the individual parts. And, you know, they don't shoot very well. This is the kind of game where this is truly a take care of business kind of game, because if SC comes out, plays hard, and to plays to the capability, they will win comfortably. But it's also the kind of game where you can definitely get, you know, Washington will play loose, as they've done. They've got some talented players. If you get into a loose game with them, kind of like how we played about some of those minutes early against Colorado, they can make a game of it. They can even take a lead here and there. So you just got to be careful about that. You have to stay disciplined. Arizona just destroyed that zone. Washington's defense is not good, but you have to be disciplined. You have to play against that zone properly and really attack it in an efficient way. So it's a take care of business kind of game. Unlike Washington State, where I think Washington State is a better team overall, and they can actually cause problems even if you're playing well. Washington is truly a take care of business game, but you got to want to take care of business. And you don't want to get sucked into their style of play. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. No, totally agree with that. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we jumped out to like a 15 or 20 point lead at the half in Washington if the guys are really focused and locked in and they hit a few shots. But it's, you know, if we're not locked in, you know, maybe Bajima hits a few threes, maybe Minifield gets a few and ones, maybe Brooks happens to be hot from the mid range that game, maybe Braxton Mia is having one of those games where he's just dominating the offensive glass because we're not boxing out, we're not locked in. So totally agree. It's the kind of game where if you're locked in, you could really blow them out. They've gotten blown out several times this year. Arizona blew them out. The Bruins blew them out. Auburn blew them out. So those were all at home, weirdly. enough. Utah blew them out, beat them by 25 in Salt Lake City. So you definitely can step on their throats early if you're locked in. But, you know, then you get in these games like they took Arizona to the wire. They beat ASU. They were kind of hanging tough with us for a while up there before we kind of figured that out and we did a few threes. So, yeah, totally agree. It's on us. It'll be dependent on, I think, our level of effort. And if we do play hard in that first half, I think we'll get through it. Okay, so kind of bigger picture here. If we do get through these two games, that puts us at 17-6. That will put us at 9-3 in the conference. And I think you get into the conversation of, okay, our KenPom is higher right now than it was at the end of last season. So I guess what are your thoughts just overall on the team in comparison to where we're at last year, where we finished last year? Cause I think it's fair to start discussing whether this team is actually better than last year's team.
Yeah. So this is a fulcrum point, I guess. Last year's season, if we remember, kind of the where it went sideways was in those last 6 minutes against Arizona out in McHale, where we actually pulled ahead to take a lead. And then Isaiah Mobley got like punched in the face, broke his nose, lost that game. We were never, I know we came back and beat UCLA, I think the following week when Drew went nuts, but we were never quite the same team that we had been up until that moment. I think we had started the season. Didn't we start like 20-4 or something? Like, I mean, we really started strong last year and just didn't finish as strongly. Everything is pointing this season in the way of positive momentum. Now, that could always get derailed, but this team doesn't really have a player like Isaiah Mobley where you think if this guy's gone or if he gets taken out, it's going to completely implode the team. Obviously, Boogie went crazy against UCLA. He's had some huge games. But we've actually demonstrated that we can win games without Boogie going crazy. I think if things hold, if we play the way we can, if these guys know they can play the defense they're capable of, this is potentially going to be better than last season. I will say, and I got to cut it short a little bit after this, but my last comment, I think, on this whole concept is, we were relying quite a bit last season with big minutes from Max Agrampolo. I think he ended up, he would get a lot of minutes at the four when we would go a little bit small. We ended up doing that a lot toward the end of last season. You know, Max is barely playing for Wyoming. And I guarantee you if Wyoming had Trey White, he'd be playing 35 minutes a game. So I think that's been a big personnel upgrade for us at that position. And it shows, and it's just got to continue. The margins are thinner, but I think we really potentially can be better than last season.
Yep. No, I totally agree with that. The momentum's different. We were trending down heading into that tournament. We dropped about 20 spots in KenPom in the last month or so. Really starting with that Arizona road game, just didn't set. It was a tough break at that point in the season. I agree. And our conference record's great. We're halfway through and we have more home games on the back half here. So have a chance with Vince back to really, push up our computer numbers and our seating numbers. So I'll just close with this, a little bracketology recap. Just looking at Jerry Palm's bracket, a few of the teams that are ahead of USC and just preview kind of how they're doing, what they have coming up. So this was updated on January 30th. So it's not super current, but starting with USC is an 8 seed. So the 6 seeds in the bracket are Miami, St. Mary's, Providence, New Mexico. Providence, New Mexico both lost last night. Miami and St. Mary's, I don't think have lost. Miami beat Virginia Tech the other day. I don't think St. Mary's has played. The 7 seeds are San Diego State, who also lost recently, Rutgers, who won last night, Michigan State, who hasn't played, Duke, who hasn't played. And then the 8 seeds, North Carolina dropped a home game to Pitt, last night. NC State blew out Florida State, who's a terrible team. And then Northwestern got run by Iowa since the brackets last updated. So I do think there's a chance we move up to the 7 line if we are able to take care of business in these next two. Any closing thoughts, Chase, for this one?
Agree with your thoughts. And all you got to say is, let's get this great effort. Hopefully everyone who's in the LA area can show up to Galen and fight on.
Yep, fight on, everyone.